At any given time, there are 85,000 people missing in this country, according to federal records. The National Institute of Justice has called it the nation's silent mass disaster. Why? Because it can ruin the lives of the families of the missing in so many ways, putting them in a legal and emotional limbo. Businessweek has an article this week entitled "The Lawyer Burying America's Living Dead." That lawyer is Thomas Ussimo. He's founding partner of Ussimo and Associates, and he joins us now. Tom, tell us about the slew of complications and questions when someone goes missing for years.
Well, one of the big problems that people have is they don't know where to turn. And when I first got the first case of these, it kind of was a learning experience for our law firm. You know, we've got four of us, and kind of we spitballed it as to what do you do? And we kind of came to the conclusion that you're not going to be able to be Superman like the police or anything, but you can certainly get the court involved for folks so that they have the authority to deal with the assets that the missing person has left behind, whether it's a house, whether it's making sure that if they get fired from a job that they can deal with the COBRA stuff that comes with that, because they get fired because they didn't show up for work because they're missing, or 401k plans, pension plans, those sorts of things. The original case, it was kind of tough because they had two homes, one of which that had to be refinanced because it was on a balloon mortgage. And we had to act kind of quick, and so we had to go at first get a conservatorship over that person's assets, which was kind of a cumbersome process. But then once we kind of sat down and said, what really happened here, the lawyers in our firm started looking at the statutes and said, you know, I think we could probably overcome the five-year presumption because it was less than 3 years. It was actually 2 years and change. And so then,
Tom, take us through what it takes in order when you go to court, and what's the procedure for getting somebody declared to be dead so that their family can collect on all these things.
In a weird sense, at least in Arizona, you've got to, obviously in other places too, you've got to prove a negative. So subpoenas to the banks, subpoenas to credit card companies, subpoenas to credit services. When you see the absence, kind of the shutoff of any signs of life, think about it. When you leave work today, you're going to go to Starbucks, get a cup of coffee, swipe your card. There's a record there. You're going to be on you're going to be on the cameras at the grocery store. You're going to be writing a check for whatever it is. You're going to go to dinner tonight and put a credit card down. The absence of those things show an amazing amount about people. The same thing with what people do or don't do when they leave home. Every morning I get up, I put my wallet in my pocket after I get out of the shower and I leave for work. A lot of these cases, you have people where the car keys are on the counter, the car's in the driveway. You kind of are basically being an archaeologist, but on a very, very specific scale.
Tell us a little bit about the case of Ignacio Jimenez.
So we had Ignacio. It's an interesting case to me because he has six children, has a wife. He had a great job with, security clearance on a military base. So this is not, somebody that nobody cares about. And his wife had come to me because their house was, the house was in foreclosure, and she needed somebody to help her with the foreclosure on the house. And she didn't have the authority to do anything because her husband was missing. And it was almost too late. And so when she came to us, it eventually became too late to save that house. And I started looking at the police reports and started making phone calls and started realizing that the U.S. government helps Americans that are in danger abroad, and so the FBI had some jurisdiction there, so we were able to bring them into it, and they were incredibly helpful. The police department down in the city where she's at, I was able to interview all of the police officers there, look at the records from the Customs and Border Enforcement, and because Ignacio went down with another person, so there was two of them, the chances of him just saying, who needs you? I got Mexico, were a little bit less because he was with another person. That other person has never surfaced either. So when you kind of build the brick wall of that case, unfortunately, there's only one conclusion I think that's reasonable, and that's the conclusion that the judge reached. the outpouring for his family was something that was nothing we've ever seen at our firm, because I must have gotten 25 phone calls, because it was around Christmas that it started getting a little bit of media here in Phoenix. And so we had a lot of people in the community here sending Christmas gifts to our office to give to our client. We had people offering to pay some of the rent and some of the back issues that, our client had with respect to housing her family, and we were able to help with that. One of my other clients saw the paper, the story in the Arizona Republic, and arranged for a Thanksgiving dinner for the entire family and had it delivered from the grocery store down in Sierra Vista.
Well, in a case like this, or the other cases you handle, you're talking about the things you have to prove and how difficult it is. What's the burden of proof here? What do you have to show the judge?
So I've never done criminal work, but that's beyond a reasonable doubt. This is the standard of proof below that, at least in Arizona, which is clear and convincing evidence. I remember the law school professor that said, you know, when you see the crumbs on the mustache of the guy, you may not have ever seen the cookie, but you can kind of conclude that he ate a cookie. It's kind of that high, as opposed to the I saw it on videotape. And there are cases that have come to us where you know that there's something not right, where I don't want to prove by clear and convincing evidence because they're trying to make something happen that didn't happen.
And have you come across any cases where the missing person was actually trying to hide their disappearance? Fake their disappearance.
There was a case, I think, that was linked to the story that Felix Gillette had in Business Week, which talked about a Phoenix case from years and years and years ago. And that's exactly what had happened. I think the guy had disappeared and came back 17 years later, 12 years later, something like that.
Well, it is a fascinating story, and it certainly will enlighten a lot of people about what you go through. It really is a long, long legal process. That's Thomas Osimo. He is a founding partner at Osimo and Associates. And if you want to read more, you can go to this week's Bloomberg Business Week to read about that story and what he's been doing. That's it for this edition of Bloomberg Law. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Wall Street time. Thanks to our technical director, Chris Tricomi, and our producer, David Sucherman. Bloomberg Markets with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson starts right now. In 15 seconds, Corey, what do you have?
We've got all kinds of stuff. We're going to take a look at markets, of course. We've got the end of the quarter, so the close today is actually going to be a relevant one as people are trying to sort of see what their numbers are like and maybe some last-minute trading to make the numbers look good.
All right. Sounds great. Nice to have you both here in the studio with us. That's up next. Bloomberg Markets, Carol Masser and Corey Johnson. Have a great weekend. This is Bloomberg.